The Art of Murder by Lucas Villalba. Fragments. It is quite convenient to go to another city when you have left various dead behind. The police tend to be dense, but they have ways of getting you if they want, since the serial killer is a glorious challenge for forensic experts, police commissioners, psychiatrists, and all types that live off your taxes. Wherever you go, you'd best not test your luck on some ordinary murder, a beggar, a widower, a whore, for practice and amusement. You should get to know the scene before doing anything, if you are professional. A greedy knife, undisciplined, blinded by eagerness, never makes a good advisor. Choosing the victim is part chance and part magic, fine, but the method should always be your first priority. To begin with, and contrary to the naivete of novelists, movie directors, young ladies, and night watchmen, I do not recommend dark side streets, but the major ones, in broad daylight, when people come and go, sure of themselves, content with their business, believing they are safe in the innocent clarity of morning. The young mother lets go of her child's hand while looking at purses in a shop window. The young professor strolls dreamily through the park, leafing through a book. And the knife glimmers there in the sun with a criminal silver pride, clean and secret, taking advantage of the victim's path near a parked car. It sinks into the pure neck of the child, or cuts, with a casual, absent grace, the erudite jugular of the professor, who had been sitting on a park bench, absorbed in some classic. And on to the open book, drops of blood fall like quivering poppy seeds. And you continue on your way indifferently, while the careless mother screams, while the curious form a chorus around the bleeding professor, who now resembles a strange surrealist mannequin, or the broken puppet of a ventriloquist. You may join this confusion, your eyes terrified by this gratuitous violence, and perhaps comment, "I don't know where this mad world will end up." It is important to dress well, with a certain air of a consul on leave or a much-honored salesman from outside the city. We must avoid the singular details that can betray us. That snake-shaped clip in the lapel, that ring with the Baroque setting, the cufflinks, never with initials. Achieve a certain vagueness with your dress, off the rack with indistinct colors. It is amazing how the simplest of witnesses recognizes a Prince of Wales or a good tweed, or how a woman in housecoat and curlers succeeds in describing the floral pattern of a tie with the incredible precision of a botanist. Although inappropriate for distinguished gentlemen, our work shoes should have rubber soles, preferably a couple sizes too large. Thus we avoid being identified by footprints left in the sand, in the shady forest, on the floor tiles of an old lady's kitchen, or wherever chance or instinct may carry us. Use dry leaves to cover the abandoned body in the depths of the forest, when the sun is hiding behind the hills, and the sky melts like lustrous gold stirred to a muddy consistency. Stop then to contemplate the greatness of this world, and give thanks for the life you enjoy, so fragile and so brief, that, with only a little poison, or the crude edge of a knife, it vanishes and gives way to darkness. Later go to some very popular bar, filled with the noise of those infernal slot machines, televisions, and dominoes falling against the Formica tabletops. Talk with the locals about the weather and the harvests. Sleep in some hotel. Let everyone see you. Later they'll say there was a stranger in town, but never specify the color of the clothes he was wearing, or what whiskey he drank, whether he was tall or thin. The practice of fleeing, remember, will make you worthy of your reputation. To be the invisible man, with a stealthy silver knife, made of fog and shadow, evanescent as those fingers that appear in dreams.